Okay, we're in Daniel chapter 5. Last week we saw the great record of Nebuchadnezzar and his proclamation. And his proclamation covered his experience and what happened to him, how he got prideful and God took him down a notch and he went insane and lived with the animals out in the fields for 7 years, and then God delivered him. And at the end of that chapter, he said, you know, truly, the God of heaven is the true God and the God of Daniel, and he's the one that gives, and he's the one that makes mighty and all the other stuff. So that was a great thing. Now, Daniel chapter 1 is Daniel comes, he's, you know, a young man, a teenager, and it's right at the beginning of Nebuchadnezzar's rule, right? It's right at the beginning. Nebuchadnezzar ruled, I believe, either 43 or 46 years. So by the time we get to chapter 4, it's near the end of Nebuchadnezzar's life. So Daniel is in his 50s, maybe his late 50s. And between chapters 4 and 5, Nebuchadnezzar falls asleep. He passes away. He dies. And it was, you know, maybe a couple of years after his deliverance. And he had a son who apparently took over as king, and his name was Amel-Marduk, or he's also referred to as Evil Merodach. That was his name. So, and he was apparently assassinated by a brother, but he is mentioned in Jeremiah. If you hold your place in Daniel chapter 5 and go to Jeremiah 52, it talks about this son of Nebuchadnezzar. In verse 31, it says, "And it came to pass in the 37th year of the captivity of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, in the 12th month, in the 25th day of the month, that evil Merodach, king of Babylon, in the first year of his reign, lifted up the head of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, and brought him forth out of prison." Now you remember, if you go back in Jeremiah, Jehoiakim was the king, and then he got killed, and then Jehoiakim went on the throne, and Nebuchadnezzar left him there for a few years, but then he rebelled. And so then Nebuchadnezzar came back or sent his men back, and they took Jehoiakim and put him in chains and brought him back to Babylon, and he had been in prison. So it says here, the 12th month in the 25th day of the month of the captivity of him. And it's the first year of the reign of king of Judah brought him forth out of prison. So it was the first year of the reign of evil Merodach. "And he spake kindly unto him and set his throne above the throne of the kings that were with him in Babylon, and changed his prison garments, and he did continually eat bread before him all the days of his life. And for his diet, there was a continual diet given him of the king of Babylon, every day a portion until the day of his death, all the days of his life." So for whatever reason, Jehoiakim liked him. I mean, evil Merodach liked Jehoiakim, but this is the guy. So he was the son of Nebuchadnezzar, and he was the king for a while. So we see that, you know, we've had a long time pass because Nebuchadnezzar was on the throne all that time. And Daniel was brought to Babylon actually before Nebuchadnezzar was king. It was whoever the previous king was, I believe. And when his Nebuchadnezzar conquered Judah, but his father died, but they had already sent back captives from Jerusalem to Babylon. And then he came back a second time, but we believe that Daniel and Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego were already there. And then Nebuchadnezzar ran back because his father died and he wanted to take over his kingdom. He didn't want anybody to sneak in and get the throne, you know, before he did. So, this is going to get a little crazy. I'm going to have to explain some things, but we'll go ahead. So, chapter 5, verse 1, Belshazzar, the king, made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords and drank wine before the 1,000. Okay? Belshazzar is king, but he's the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. It says later on we're going to read that he's his father, Nebuchadnezzar. But we'll look at that. But his father was really I'll have it written down somewhere. Nabonidus was his father, and he was the king. And he was at this time at war in Arabia. So he had Belshazzar sitting on the throne and ruling the city of Babylon, watching over things. Okay? So Belshazzar is really the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. And if you go back again to Jeremiah 27, in verse 6 it says, "And now have I given all these lands into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant, and the beasts of the field have I given him also to serve him. And all nations serve him and his son's son, until the very time of his land come, and then many nations and great kings shall serve themselves of him. And it shall come..." "And it shall come to pass that the nation and the kingdom which will not serve the name of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, and that will not put their neck under the yoke of the king of Babylon, that nation will I punish, saith the Lord, with the sword and with famine and with pestilence until I have consumed them by his hand." So he talks about all nations shall serve Nebuchadnezzar and his son's son. Okay, until the end of the kingdom of Babylon. You know, that, again, remember in the early thing in chapter 2, we saw the vision. You know, Nebuchadnezzar had the vision, and he had this statue, and the head was gold, and then the breast and the arms were silver, and the legs were, the thighs and the waist were brass, and the legs were iron, and the feet. Okay, so so this takes place about 23 years after Nebuchadnezzar's death. And Belshazzar is called king, and I explained to you, he's the king. His father has put him there, he has that title, but his father is really the king of the empire, and he's underneath him. Okay? Belshazzar, whiles he tasted the wine, commanded to bring the golden and silver vessels which his father, Nebuchadnezzar, had taken out of the temple, which was in Jerusalem, that the king and his princes, his wives, and his concubines might drink therein. Okay, and it calls Nebuchadnezzar his father, but in the Old Testament and biblical times, like, for instance, Israel always referred to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob as their fathers, right? Don't use the term grandfather or great-grandfather or ancestors. It's just, you know, he's a father. And that's what Nebuchadnezzar was. He was his father, Nebuchadnezzar, but it was really his grandfather, okay? So it says here that they're drinking, and it also pay attention that it's his princes, his wives, and his concubines. And remember, he had 1,000 princes there, 1,000. And when the Word of God says he made a feast to 1,000 of his lords, there was 1,000. That's a lot of guys. That's a big party. Okay, so he brought the vessels that Nebuchadnezzar had brought back from Jerusalem. Hold your place here. Go to 2 Kings. Now, if you don't remember, one of the things that happened in Jerusalem when Hezekiah had gotten sick, I just went past it twice. 2 Kings chapter 24. When Hezekiah got sick and recovered, some emissaries came from Babylon because they had heard of his recovery. And Hezekiah was a good host, and he treated him well, and he fed him. But then he took him and showed him the treasures of Israel, including the treasures of the temple. And Jeremiah rebuked him for that. He said, that was a mistake. You shouldn't have done that. So in 2 Kings chapter 24, verse 6, it says, so Jehoiakim slept with his fathers, and Jehoiakim, his son, reigned in his stead. And the king of Egypt came not again any more of his land, for the king of Babylon had taken from the river Egypt unto the river Euphrates all that pertained to the king of Egypt. Jehoiakim was 18 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned in Jerusalem 3 months, and his mother's name was Nehushta. What a great name, Nehushta, the daughter of Elnathan of Jerusalem. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord according to all that his father had done. That's not a good thing to have said about you in the Bible. Just saying. At that time, the servants of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up against Jerusalem, and the city was besieged. And Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came against the city, and his servants did besiege it. And Jehoiakim, king of Judah, went out to the king of Babylon, he and his mother and his servants and his princes and his officers. And the king of Babylon took him in the 8th year of his reign. And he carried out thence all the treasures of the house of the Lord and the treasures of the king's house, and cut in pieces all the vessels of gold which Solomon, king of Israel, had made in the temple of the Lord, as the Lord had said. And he carried away all Jerusalem and all the princes and all the mighty men of valor, even 10,000 captives, and all the craftsmen and smiths. None remained save the poorest of the people of the land. And he carried away Jehoiakim to Babylon, and the king's mother and the king's wives and his officers and the mighty of the land, and those he carried into captivity from Jerusalem to Babylon, and all the men of might, even 7,000, and craftsmen, smiths, 1,000, all that were strong and apt of war, even them the king of Babylon brought captive to Babylon. Wow. And then in chapter 25, verse 8, it says, and in the 5th month, on the 7th day of the month, which is the 19th year of King Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, came Nebuzaradan, captain of the guard, a servant of the king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem, and he burnt the house of the Lord and the king's house and all the houses of Jerusalem, and every great man's houses burnt he with fire. And all the army of the Chaldees that were with the captain of the guard break down the walls of Jerusalem round about. Now the rest of the people that were left in the city and the fugitives that fell away to the king of Babylon with the remnant of the multitude did Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, carry away. But the captain of the guard left the poor of the land to be vine dressers and husbandmen, farmers, dirt farmers, I guess. And the pillars of brass that were in the house of the Lord and the bases and the brazen sea that was in the house of the Lord did the Chaldees break in pieces and carried the brass of them to Babylon, and the pots and the shovels and the snuffers and the spoons and all the vessels of brass wherewith they ministered, took they away, and the fire pans and the bowls and such things as were of gold and in gold and of silver in silver, the captain of the guard took away. The two pillars, one sea and bases which Solomon had made for the house of the Lord, the brass of these vessels was without weight. And so on and so forth. So they pretty much, you know, stripped the house of everything. They stripped Jerusalem of everything. They took it back to Babylon. And as we saw, these houses were in the temple and they were made for service unto God. They were dedicated to God and consecrated and set apart for God's service. So it's not like, you know, you're using your mother's best china by accident or something. You know, these things were very special, and God had told Solomon when he built the temple to make these things, and they were solely for the service to God, and they were only to be used by the priests and the Levites. So, verse 3, back in Daniel chapter 5, verse 3. Then they brought the golden vessels that were taken out of the temple of the house of God, which was at Jerusalem, and the king and his princes, his wives and concubines drank in them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and of silver, of brass, of iron, of wood, and of stone. Wow. So they took the vessels, the things consecrated to God, and they used them for idol worship. That's a slap in the face to God. Amazing. Now, just to give you a little understanding of what's going on at this time, at the time of this feast, Babylon was at war with the Medo-Persian Empire, or the Medo-Persian Empire. And the city was being besieged. It was surrounded by the Persian army. But Belshazzar felt pretty comfortable being in the city of Babylon. And I kind of gave you a description of Babylon the other day. There's a couple of different ones. They don't all agree. But in this book I'm reading on Daniel, it says, the city of Babylon was built in an exact square of 15 miles on a side, or 60 miles around. Now, there's, you know, questions about that, but it was really big. It was surrounded by a brick wall 87 feet thick, which according to Herodotus was 350 feet high. On the walls were 250 towers. On top of the wall, the top of the wall was wide enough to permit six chariots to drive abreast. Outside this wall was a vast ditch or moat surrounding the city, kept filled with water from the river Euphrates and crossed by drawbridges in front of the gates. Inside the wall was not far from it another wall, not much inferior, but narrower, extending around the city. 25 magnificent avenues, 150 feet wide, ran across the city from north to south, and the same number crossed them at right angles from east to west, making 676 great squares, each nearly three-fifths of a mile on a side. A wide avenue also ran around the city inside the walls and close to them, into which the cross avenues emptied. At the end of these cross avenues, magnificently burnished two-leaved gates of brass were built in the city walls that shone as they were opened or closed in the rising or setting sun like leaves of fire. Sounds pretty impressive, huh? The city was divided into two equal parts by the river Euphrates that flowed diagonally across it, and its banks were walled and pierced with brazen gates at the main avenues. Outside these river walls and between them and the river, splendid wharves lined the river on each side within the city. Ferry boats crossed the river at each of the main avenues, and at the central avenue, a magnificent bridge spanned the river, at each end of which was a beautiful palace. These palaces were connected by subterranean passages, or tube, underneath the bed of the river, in which at different points were located sumptuous banquet rooms constructed entirely of brass. Near one of these palaces stood the Tower of Babel. There were eight towers, each 70 feet high, rising upon the other with an outside winding stairway to the summit, which the towers with the chapel on the top made a height of 660 feet. The chapel contained the most expensive furniture of any place of worship in the world. One golden image alone, 45 feet high, was valued at $17,500,000. This book was written in 1920 or something. And the whole sacred thing was $200 million in gold. Babylon also contained one of the seven wonders of the world, the famous Hanging Gardens. And it goes on. So here's this guy, Belshazzar, and he's having this feast because he is so comfortable in the city because it's impregnable, right? 350-foot walls, 87-foot thick, gates that are made out of brass, the river running through it, and there's walls on each side of the river. So, you know, there's no way to get in. The city is self-sustaining. There's room to grow food and graze animals. They have fresh water. And he's here having a party. So this feast marks the end of the kingdom of the head of Nebuchadnezzar's vision, the kingdom of gold, and marks the beginning of the kingdom of silver of the arms and breasts, as we shall see. At this time, Babylon was at war with the Medo-Persian Empire, who had besieged the city. This feast was in contempt of the siege. Belshazzar felt secure within the massive walls of the city. So they drank the wine, verse 4, and praised the gods of gold and silver, of brass, of iron, of wood, and of stone. In the same hour, so when he brought the vessels and he started drinking the wine and worshiping the idols, in the same hour came forth fingers of a man's hand and wrote over against the candlestick upon the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. Wow. So, you know, they're having this party, and all of a sudden this hand comes out. It reminds me of the Addams Family, It. What was the the hand, whatever it was called? What was the hand called? Cousins.
No, it was just the hand.
Just a hand. They called it hand, right? Yeah. Well, whatever. Okay.
Thing.
That's it. But this was the hand of God. And so the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. Then the king's countenance was changed. And in the NIV and some other versions, it says he went pale or ashen. You know, he just turned white, basically. So his countenance was changed. His thoughts troubled him so that the joints of his loins were loosed and his knees smote one against the other. He was doing more than that, yeah. Well, his thoughts troubled. The word troubled is raced. So, you know, when you get nervous or upset, your mind races, you know? You're thinking the 1,800 different things of what could be going on. And the joints of his loins loosed is kind of like an idiom. It means he lost all his strength. He just is, you know, he couldn't sit up or stand up. He just lost his strength. And of course, his knees smote means they were knocking together. He lost physical control of his body. The king cried aloud to bring in the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers, and the king spake and said to the wise men of Babylon, whosoever shall read this writing and show me the interpretation thereof shall be clothed with scarlet and have a chain of gold about his neck and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom. And he'll be the third ruler in the kingdom. Why? Because he himself is the second ruler. And the first ruler is his father, Nabonidus, who's not there. And when it says here, the thing that was written, it says it's in the Hebrew or the Aramaic, it's an inscription. So it was kind of like etched into the wall. It wasn't like, you know, painted or anything. It was, I mean, it was in the wall, physically in the wall. Okay? Then came all the king's wise men, but they could not read the writing nor make known to the king the interpretation thereof. Now, you know, this is kind of the same bunch of guys that Nebuchadnezzar had called previously. Maybe it wasn't the identical guys, but it was, you know, that class of people, the elites and the astronomers or astrologers and the necromancers and the wizards and all these different guys who they had depended on, and they couldn't do it before. And, you know, they continued on. They had their own little school. They would raise these guys up. They would teach them. And these guys, you know, same result as with Nebuchadnezzar. They couldn't give him any help whatsoever. Then was King Belshazzar greatly troubled, and his countenance was changed in him, and his lords were astonied or astonished. They're looking at this, and they're all seeing it because it's physically visible. And they're all shook. And they see the king, who's supposed to be the leader, and if he's shook up, then they know they better be shook up. So he was the third ruler, and, I mean, he's the second ruler. He promises somebody that they're going to be the third ruler. So, verse 10. Now the queen, by reason of the words of the king and his lords, came into the banquet house, and the queen spake and said, O king, live forever. Let not thy thought trouble thee, nor let thy countenance be changed. So here comes the queen. Now, she is not Belshazzar's wife, because it said his wives, plural, and his concubines were at the party, drinking with him. But she apparently was either the wife of his father, who was off to war, or his grandmother. So we would probably refer to her as the queen mother. So she says, you know, relax. Don't be so upset. There is a man, verse 11, there is a man in thy kingdom in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And in the days of thy father, Nebuchadnezzar, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, was found in him, whom the king Nebuchadnezzar, thy father, the king, I say thy father, made master of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers. So she gives him the lowdown. She says, you know, she knew of Daniel, right? She knew of Daniel. And she says, you know, there's this guy, and he really helped your father, your grandfather, Nebuchadnezzar, to figure out his dreams and his when he needed help. And he was so great that he made him master over all these other flunkies. Well, they were. They were flunkies. They, every time they got called, this is the third time, and each time they couldn't figure it out. They couldn't figure it out at all. Now, at this time, so remember, years have gone by. So since the time of chapter 4 and Nebuchadnezzar, at least 20-something years has gone by. So at this point in time, Daniel is probably in his early 80s. And we don't know anything about Daniel's life in the in-between years. We're just, you know, maybe he was just lying low, or he was just doing his administrative work, and nothing came up, and everything was hunky-dory, and he's just living his life. There's an interesting thing about Daniel as you read through the book. In just about every man of God in the Bible, as great as they are, you know, God also shows us that they're human. When they made mistakes or made errors, you know, we see that in the Word. You know, Moses made mistakes. Abraham had his little missteps. David had certainly some mistakes and errors. And you know, Paul and Peter and all those guys. There's nothing recorded in Daniel that he ever did anything wrong. That's not to say he had a perfect life. I don't believe that is true, because nobody was perfect except Jesus Christ. But it's not recorded, which is kind of interesting when you think about it. There's no recorded mistake, doubt, sin, or anything concerning Daniel. So the queen comes and she tells Belshazzar, here's the guy, he's the one. Verse 12. Well, she said, he's a man who the spirit of the holy gods, and, you know, Nebuchadnezzar made him the guy. And if you went back to Daniel chapter 2, verse 48, you don't have to go there, but I'll just read it to you. It says, then the king made Daniel a great man and gave him many great gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. So he was already in charge of all these guys. Maybe he was kind of retiring at this point. I don't know. But anyway, verse 13, then was Daniel brought before the king, and the king spake and said unto Daniel, art thou that Daniel which art of the children of the captivity of Judah, whom the king, my father, brought out of Jewry? He's asking him a question. And then he goes, I have even heard of thee that the spirit of the gods is in thee, and that light and understanding and excellent wisdom is found in thee. And now these wise men, the astrologers, have been brought in before me that they should read this writing and make known unto me the interpretation of thereof, but they could not show the interpretation of the thing. And I have heard of thee that thou canst make interpretations and dissolve doubts. Now, if thou canst read the writing and make known to me the interpretation thereof, thou shalt be clothed with scarlet and have a chain of gold about thy neck and shalt be the third ruler in the kingdom. So he lays it all out and he makes this great offer. But, you know, Daniel's already been rewarded numerous times. He's probably living a pretty comfortable life and he's pretty old. I mean, what else does he need? And he was already the chief counselor. Maybe Belshazzar didn't realize that. I don't know. So Daniel, what a guy. Daniel answered and said before the king, let thy gifts be to thyself and give thy rewards to another. Yet I will read the writing unto the king and make known to him the interpretation. So he turns down the reward. It kind of reminds me of Abraham after he got Lot back, after he beat those kings, and the king of Sodom comes and offers him. He says, you take of the spoils of the war. And he says, I'm not touching that. God will take care of me. God rewards me. And there's been a couple of other instances, too, where men of God, you know, were offered rewards or riches from unbelievers, and they turned them down. So he said, nope, no thanks, I don't need it, but I'll give you the interpretation, because you really need all the help you can get. Verse 18. O thou king, the Most High God gave Nebuchadnezzar thy father a kingdom and majesty and glory and honor. So right off the bat, what does he say? Who gave this kingdom to Nebuchadnezzar?
God.
God's the one that gave him the glory and the honor. God's the one. And previous to this, in chapter 4, Nebuchadnezzar had made a proclamation to the whole kingdom that this was true. And for the majesty that he gave him, the majesty that God gave Nebuchadnezzar, all people, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him, whom he slew, and whom he kept alive, and whom he would set up, and whom he would put down. Because Nebuchadnezzar was what? He was a total autocrat. He could do whatever he wanted. He wasn't bound by any laws. He was the law. So if he decided that somebody was going to die, they died. If he decided they would live, they lived. If he wanted to promote somebody, he promoted him. If he wanted to throw him in jail, he threw him in jail. He promoted Daniel, right? He made Daniel, put him above all these other guys, and made him the chief guy. Verse 20, but when his, Nebuchadnezzar's heart was lifted up, and his mind hardened with pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him. And he was driven from the sons of men, and his heart was made like the beasts, and his dwelling was with the wild asses, and they fed him with grass like oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till he knew that the Most High God ruled in the kingdom of men, and that he appointeth over it whomsoever he will. Wow, that's a pretty strong statement. It's God that had given Nebuchadnezzar the absolute power, and when Nebuchadnezzar didn't listen, took him down. And then when he got straight, he picked him back up, and he put him back on his throne again. And Daniel, in each of those cases, was promoted. And, you know, he was given honor because he served God. Verse 22. And thou, his son Belshazzar, hast not humbled thine heart, though thou knewest all this. Mm-hmm. He knew it all. You know why? Because he was probably a young kid and he was alive at the time that Nebuchadnezzar made his proclamation. And we know that because that's what Dan said. He said, you knew this. You were around. You heard about this. You knew this. It wasn't a state secret. It was a proclamation made by Nebuchadnezzar. You knew this. Thou, his son, O Belshazzar, has not humbled thy heart, though thou knewest all this. You knew to humble your heart before the true God, and you didn't do it. But thou hast lifted up thyself against the Lord of heaven, and they have brought the vessels of his house before thee. And thou and thy lords, thy wives, and thy concubines have drunk wine in them, and hast praised the gods of silver and gold, of brass, of iron, wood, and stone, which see not nor hear not know, and God, the God in whose hand thy breath is, and whose are all thy ways, has thou not glorified? You know, you're praising and drinking and worshiping these gods of gold and silver and wood and stone, and they can't talk. They're not alive. They don't know anything. But you don't worship God, the true God, the God that gives you the very breath you breathe. Verse 24. Then was the part of the hand sent from him, from God. And this writing was written. Woohoo. So it was there and it was for all to see. Right? Everybody saw it. It was a physical writing on the wall. And this is the writing that was written. Many, many tekel a parson. Literally, it is numbered, weighed divisions. That's what the words mean literally. Verse 26. This is the interpretation of the thing. Many. God hath numbered thy kingdom and finished it. Tekel, thou art weighed in the balances and art found wanting. And Perez. Now, why isn't Perez and a parson the same? Well, it's the same word. It's a different form of the word. One's the singular and one's the plural. Okay? That's all it is. It means broken up. The kingdom is broken up or divided into the Medes and the Persians. The kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians. So, Mekel, many, many, Tekel, a parson, or Perez. You are numbered, and thy kingdom is finished, means your kingdom is over. And you've been weighed in the balances, and you've come up short, and the kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. That's a pretty strong interpretation. He didn't pull any punches, did he? Then commanded Belshazzar, and they clothed Daniel with scarlet and put a chain of gold about his neck and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler of the kingdom. Unfortunately, he didn't really have a kingdom left to give him. But so what Daniel had told Nebuchadnezzar years ago when he had the first vision concerning the statue of the gold and the silver and the brass and the iron, he said, you know, eventually that your kingdom would come to an end. He explained that to him. The reason that the Aramaic, which the wise men spoke, mystified them, and they were so unable to figure out. This is what I read, and this is all I can tell you. The letters, okay, this is a quote. The letters may have been arranged in an acrostic style. There is an illustration in the Talmud which may explain this. So if you were to take on your paper, if you have a pen and paper, and you write in a column, P-R S going down, and then in the next column, TKL, and then MNA in the third column, and then the fourth MNA. Because in Aramaic and Hebrew, they read from right to left. But they say in the Talmud that it was written top to bottom. And so it confused these guys, and they didn't see that. And so from right to left, it's Mene, Mene, Tekel, a parson. Okay? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So one thing you have to say about Belshazzar, he kept his word. He gave Daniel what he promised him, and he bestowed the reward. And maybe he didn't think that this was going to happen so quickly. He thought, well, okay. So the kingdom's going to come to an end, but I got a little time left yet. But then we read verse 30. In that night, in that very night, was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain. And Darius, the Median, took the kingdom, being about 80 years old. Okay, so Darius the Median, or the Mede, took control, and he was 62 years old, which is kind of an advanced age at that time. I mean, Daniel was already older. And, you know, we know that people lived older, but the average lifespan probably wasn't all that great in those days. Okay. Now, I got to explain about Darius and Cyrus a little bit. It was Cyrus who conquered Babylon and then put Darius on the throne. Cyrus was the ruler of the Medo-Persian Empire. Darius was of an Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus, you might remember in the book of Esther, right? It talks about her husband, Ahasuerus. But that's as much a title as a name, and there are at least three different people that are attributed with that title, Ahasuerus. So Daniel was of an Ahasuerus, which is the Persian title for majesty. There may be at least four different people in the Bible addressed as such. Darius, through his mother, probably was of the royal blood of both the Medes and of the Persians. Okay? So they were related. Cyrus and Darius were related. And when Cyrus conquered the city, he put Darius in charge of that city, which was, you know, a pretty good position to be. Now, the other question you probably have is, how did the city fall? And nobody really knows for sure. There's a couple of different theories. One is that Cyrus blocked up the water of the river, or diverted the river, and so they came through the river gates and then overwhelmed the guards and the city, because, you know, all the hotshots were partying. They didn't expect anybody to break in. They didn't expect anybody to be there. The other theory is that Belshazzar had insulted some of the priests of the religions of Babylon, and so they opened the gates for the Persians and let them in. You know, but nobody really knows. But at any rate, the end of the kingdom of gold and of Nebuchadnezzar came to an end that night, and now we have the kingdom of silver, of the shoulders and the breasts of the statue in his vision. Okay? So that's where we're going to end tonight. That's chapter 5. Pretty crazy. Pretty crazy stuff. What a city that... Jim had a picture on his iPad last week of the Gate of Ishtar, which was the main gate of the city. And it was really cool looking. But anyway, it was an amazing city, and they started to rebuild it again at one point. I don't know how far they've gotten, but eventually, it says in Revelation, it will be rebuilt, and it'll be the center of the world for a short period of time. So that's it for tonight. I'll pray. Father God, we thank you for loving us, for taking care of us, for what a great word you've given us, and what a great example of a man who believed, not just as a young man, just not through his life, but from his youth to his old age, and how he just never gave up, God. He just continued to stay faithful and love you and serve you, that you were number one in his life. We thank you for being able to read this and understand it and have the blessings of understanding your word and how what a great God you are. We thank you for a great night for everyone, a great night's sleep, and for blessing everyone. In the name of Jesus Christ, amen.